This movie sure did put a spell on a lot of people. This week, Chloe and I are discussing the spooky holiday movie, Hocus Pocus. And the fact that it's 30 years old this year is not scary at all, or is it the scariest? So join us in this discussion about Max the Good Boy, Binks the Unkillable, and Allison, the glue that holds the whole group together. And wasn't there a child in this one? Oh well.
We put a spell on you, and now you have to rate, like, and subscribe this podcast. Welcome to In Media Les, podcast about queer relationships and media. I'm Chloe.
And I'm Val.
And today we'll be discussing the 1993 cult classic. I don't know. Does it count? I think it counts as a cult classic. Hocus Pocus, which is not explicitly queer, but it's got, you know, Bette Midler, so it's queer adjacent. So this movie stars Bette Midler, Sarah Jessica Parker, Kathy Najimy as the Sanderson sisters, who are iconic. I think a lot of drag queens owe it to these three sisters. So we figured we'd talk about it as a fun fall movie. And if you will be spoiling it, but it's a cheesy Disney made-for-kids movie, so it's not exactly the most... I don't know, this is not Citizen Kane. We are not revealing what Rosebud is here. But if you have not, there are spoilers. So, Val, let me get us started by saying, how old were you when you first saw Hocus Pocus?
Interesting question. I think...
Because I guess I'm asking, were you a child or were you an adult?
I was a child. I think I was probably nine. I feel like it was the first, it would have been the first October that we moved here.
Interesting. So, like, how were you exposed to it? Because I feel like, for me personally, and what happened was that, like, this movie came out, like, right at the point where my brother and I were probably, like, the peak ages for it. Well, it came out a little early, maybe, but, like, we had it on VHS. I remember that. And for those of you who are younger, that is the tape. And you would put the tape in, you'd have to rewind it because it was physical media.
Oh no, but, we have to describe that. Oh my god.
We watched it so much, Jason and I, that I think the tape broke.
Ooh, amazing.
Like, okay. We wore down the tape, which we also did to The Lion King and Aladdin, so.
Interesting.
So I guess the question why I brought up that anecdote is, like, I feel like this movie, and according to Wikipedia, it was, like, a box office disappointment. And so, like, how did you see it on the Disney Channel? Or, like, how were you exposed to it?
I'm just guessing here because I'm not entirely sure. It's been so long, but it must have been shown on the Disney Channel for, like, okay, their Halloween marathons.
Yeah, so, like, apparently that was how it kind of became a cult classic, was that they would air it repeatedly in October. But I didn't have the Disney Channel growing up. We didn't have cable, so I just knew it because we had a VHS of it.
So they used to show Halloween Town for years and years and years.
I don't even know what that is.
What's You've never Halloween seen Town? Halloween Town?
No.
It's like a Halloween movie. It's from 98, and it has similar vibes. It's like this, well, slightly similar vibes. It's
Disney
this girl
Channel
whose parents,
original.
Yeah. Oof. Her grandma is a witch, and she has to, like, save the town or something. I don't remember. It's been decades.
Wait, it's got Debbie Reynolds in it.
Yeah, she's the witch.
Okay. We could also do this movie because Debbie Reynolds is totally queer adjacent.
Adjacent?
Adjacent. Queer adjacent.
But it's very, very similar, but it's on the side of the witches.
Okay. So it's like, so the witches do not eat children in this one.
No.
Okay. I mean, it could still be on their side and they eat children. That would just be that'd be a very dark children's movie.
Well, okay, I haven't seen this. I haven't seen this in a very long time. I think I might have watched it maybe twice Halloween in my life.
Town or Hocus Pocus?
Hocus Pocus. Let's refocus.
Wait, we're talking about Hocus Pocus and you haven't seen it in a long time?
Well, I've seen it for this week.
Oh, okay. Okay. But just making sure. I thought you said that and it was like, I was going to be like, Val, you didn't do your homework?
I am not prepared at all, listeners.
Okay.
So I'm pretty sure that the last time I've seen it was, in fact, in 04 when I moved here.
Okay.
Because they either I never caught it again or they stopped showing it on Disney because I haven't seen it. That's like usually how I would see movies and I haven't seen it in a very long time. I didn't realize how grown up a lot of the jokes are.
Yeah, it's got a lot of sexual humor.
A lot. Oh my God.
Yeah. And you've got like Sarah Jessica Parker's character, whose name I'm going to look up.
Sarah
Sanderson.
Sarah's playing a Sarah.
Yes. Who is just like horny. I don't know how else to describe her character.
Into boys.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it is an interesting, it's one of those movies where it's like, I don't know, like when you were a kid, all the sexual stuff totally went over your head. But when you watch it as an adult, you're like, oh my God.
Especially like, the bus driver. Like, oh my God.
Yeah, that bus driver, that guy. I'm trying to look up because who's the actor who plays him? I feel like he's someone. I'm thinking about who plays the devil. That guy's in like a whole lot of stuff. Gary Marshall, that's his name. He's like a well-known character actor. He was on Happy Days and Mork and Mindy and stuff. So
I don't know that stuff.
I don't really either. I know of Happy Days.
What is that?
It's the thing the Fonz is from. Do you know the Fonz?
Mm-mm.
The guy in the leather jacket who leans on the jukebox and goes, "Hey."
Nope.
Man, you are not okay. It's amazing just the things of like American culture you just have no exposure to. Like, because I don't blame you for not knowing who the Fonz is, because I feel like it's a bit of a deep cut at this point. But I feel like if you said that to any of our parents who were in the United States, they would be incredulous, because the Fonz was like a cultural. He was kind of like the Bart Simpson of the 1970s, just like this like kind of rebellious teen kid guy with an iconic catchphrase, and I don't know, people would imitate him. Anyway,
interesting.
The Fonz exists. Anyway, Hocus Pocus.
Hocus Pocus. Let's refocus. Should we talk I'm going to keep saying
let's
that.
Let's refocus on the Hocus Pocus before this gets bogus. No, that's not quite it. Do we want to go through the plot? Or
sure.
No.
Yeah. Let's look at the plot. Okay. I feel like many people have not watched it. After all, it is 30 years this year.
Is it?
Yeah. 93 to 23.
This movie's old. The movie is about the Sanderson sisters, played by Bette Midler, Sarah Jessica Parker, and Kathleen Najimy, who are in the 17th century in Salem. They aren't they burned at the stake, I believe. But they promise that they'll be back and they have a way to come back. And so then we cut to the present day, or at least 1993, back when that was the present day. And there is a teen guy by the name of Max, and he's just moved to the town, right? And he has to take his sister trick-or-treating and he's kind of bummed out by it. And then they visit the Sanderson Museum, which is like dedicated to the witches. And he lights a candle. And because he's a virgin who lit the candle, he brings the witches back to life.
One thought keeps coming back to me, and this reminds me so much of Fear Street.
I think that's on purpose. I think Fear Street is kind of an homage to a lot of the elements of Hocus Pocus.
Yeah, which I didn't realize until just now.
Yeah. Because it's got the same vibe, right? Like, it's like these, Fear Street has one witch who gets kind of resurrected, or what is it? The witch is like resurrected every 30 years. It's something like that. in Fear Street.
We don't want to spoil it, but
no, okay. There is a witch that gets resurrected.
Yeah. And yeah, we have an episode for it, so watch it and then go listen to that episode.
Yeah, watch all three of the movies. They're excellent. So a big part of the movie revolves around Bette Midler. I should just call her by character name. Winifred, mm-hmm. Winnie, her spell book, which Max steals. And they meet the cat Binks, who was a boy by the name of Thackeray Binks in the 17th century, but now he's stuck as a mortal cat. And he is like their guide. And
the first thing that happens in this movie is they kill a child, like full on kill a child.
Yeah, yeah. So Thackeray Binks's, I should have mentioned, sister Emily gets murdered by the Sanderson sisters at the start. I mean, like it's off screen, right? It's just like her life force gets drained.
It's on not screen, like they're like, but it's very like ambiguous. Yeah, but then
they're not like bleeding her or something.
They don't boil her in a cauldron. She's just sitting there, and then they, like, suck the life out of her.
Yeah, and they want to do the same thing to Max's sister, so that they can be back forever, I guess. Or it's something like they'll die at the end of the night if they don't eat a child's soul or something. There's some vibe to it. Anyway,
yeah,
it's not that important. Basically, the kids have the spell book. They're trying to play keep away with the witches. There is an amazing scene where Winifred hexes an entire auditorium full of adults with, "I put a spell on you."
That was really good. I really liked that scene.
I feel like it's an iconic scene.
It is. And can I just say, this movie is so good with the whole like horror genre trope of like the main character is not competent until the second half of the movie, where they have to be. Like throughout this movie, Max is just on point, and so is Allison, honestly. Like they're just doing everything right.
Yeah,
I really like how they use the writing in this to have not their like stupidity be the downfall of a lot of their plans, but the environment in which they're in. For example, when they ran to the cops, right? It was just a guy in a cop costume. So right. They didn't realize that they didn't actually inform a police officer. When they went to the party and told the parents, the adults, Winifred was there to, first of all, like, discredit him because she's the adult.
Yeah.
But also she like cursed everyone. Like it's very interesting. I don't see this happen a lot in movies, which I think causes a lot of frustration for many people who watch these sort of movies, where it's like, why is everyone just really bad at everything, right? Like it doesn't make logical sense. Whereas here, they're seemingly doing everything to the best of their ability without like stupid things. But the environment and the antagonists are actively also being smart about it. And I think that's like so surprising for a children's movie. It's really great.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It is like one of the few horror stories out there where it's not like, I don't know, like
they're running and they trip on a branch. Yeah. Like, yeah. No, like everyone is very actively a fully functioning human.
Yeah.
They take kids seriously.
Yes. It's got an internal consistency, which we appreciate.
Mm-hmm. You know, I really love episodes like these the most, where there's not a lot of like queer content, so we get to go into the actual like content of the thing we're doing.
Yes.
Kind of miss the whole analysis thing.
I mean, we could still do an analysis of it, because there's a lot to talk about. So the witches managed to recover the book, and at some point they meet Billy, who is Winifred's former love interest, Billy Butcherson, and he looks like a zombie, but he manages to cut his mouth open, and then it turns out that he's actually a good guy.
Well, because I really Winifred like Billy. Sewed his eyes and mouth shut, because he cheated on her, I think, her sister, well, right?
Yeah, I think it was something along those lines. Yeah.
But it was probably more so that Sarah either enchanted him or something like that.
Yeah.
Because she can do that.
Yeah.
But I will say, Sisters Before Misters is strong here.
Yeah, that's true. Because
Winifred is not really mad at Sarah. She's mad at her for being, like, a dummy.
Yeah.
But they are a unit.
They are a unit. I don't know why that was funny to me, but it was.
Because when they come together, they transform into one big muscular guy. Complete unit.
Okay.
Yeah, that was a bad joke. Maybe
that happens in the sequel. Anyway,
it's 9:30.
It's 9:20. Don't get ahead of yourself.
It's 9:19, listener.
I'm going to finish the John plot summary. I just want to finish it. So they try and do, basically the Sanderson sisters try and do a ritual. They're going to drain Max's life force. There's a struggle. They manage to fend them off. The sisters off, and Winifred falls into the hollow ground of the cemetery, turns to stone, and the sun rises, and the two other sisters are disintegrated into dust along with Winifred. And this breaks Binx's curse. He's allowed to die, which is very, like, there's a cat that just dies at the end of this movie. And, like, yeah. Wow. Again, this is, I don't know that would have happened today, but that means that Thackeray gets to reunite with his sister Emily, and they head off into heaven together, and Billy goes back to sleep. And you get a hint, though, that the spell book is still around. The sisters could come back. And there is, in fact, a sequel that came out in last year, I believe.
Really?
Actually, yes. It was not. I mean, it was total just fan service. I think it was basically the same plot again, except that the narrative this time was like three teen girls who are practicing fake witchcraft accidentally practice real witchcraft and bring back the Sanderson sisters.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I won't say more because that's not the topic. We'll save it for next year's Halloween episode.
Oh, I remember seeing the posters. Yeah.
Yeah. It's actually a pretty stunning example of how, I don't know how Bette Midler is able to, like, how they're able to get her to look so exactly the same, but they did. And it's very impressive given that Bette Midler, I think, is in like her 70s, if not her 80s now.
Yeah, and she was in her 40s back then.
Yeah, she's 77.
Crazy. Really good.
Yeah.
Good for them.
Yeah, good for Bette. And Sarah Jessica Parker was also looking pretty good, which, I don't know. Good for her.
Mary is specifically made to be a little bit deformed in the mouth.
Yeah, she does that weird way of moving her mouth.
Yeah.
And she's got the weird, it's okay.
The little cool whip hair.
Well, okay, here's my, I think the hair is supposed to be evocative of a witch's hat without being a witch's hat.
Probably, that's, yeah,
my theory. Okay. I guess you don't care as much about my theory as I do. I was just like, yes,
that's, oh, it's a good theory. It looks, okay, like a witch's hat.
Val is just being patronizing now.
You're so right, Chloe.
Yeah, thank you.
Did I do that well? That's my gremlin laugh. I already said how competent the characters are in this movie, but like, even Allison, it's really cool how, like, the quote-unquote love interest is so important to what they're doing. Like, very often, she's not only impulse control, she's also a safe space for Danny. And, like, she also comes up with a lot of the ideas. And I don't think we've seen that recently in a lot of stuff where, if, like, especially in kids' movies, like, the girlfriend is the girlfriend sort of thing. Whereas here, she very clearly is not only Max's way into this world, but also, like, this weird kind of, not really foil, but very parallel and the same. Like, I really like it. It's rare that both the main character and the love interest have equal importance in the plot, and I really enjoyed that part of it.
It is actually, for kind of a cheesy film, it is extremely well written, and I feel like the characters, I mean, aside from the witches, I feel like every other character has a lot of depth to them. There's a lot of multi-role of the kids, I guess, of the protagonists. Mm-hmm. There's some, they all have agency. They all have drives, and it's actually fairly rare to see a horror film with the protagonists not just being stereotypes of, like, especially when they're teenagers. Mm-hmm. It is actually impressive that no one's really, I mean, like, Max is a bit of the, like, prototypical 90s teenage boy.
I hate everything. Yeah. Sort of like it. But yeah, I think it's just you know, a trope of the era that very quickly died out.
He does love his sister. Like, by the end, like, he loves his sister. He's a little annoyed at the beginning that he has to trick-or-treat with her, but, like...
But he immediately apologizes, which, like, never happens. Yeah. Usually what happens is he stays mad, and then the sister gets kidnapped, and he has to save her and then apologize.
Yeah.
He's really good about it. I mean, the same thing with Allison, because when they're first... when she's first introduced as, like, correcting him in class, he just... First of all, very, very smoothly, the boy's got game, walks up to her, and gives her his number.
Yeah.
Like... Good for you, Max. But also, like, afterwards, because a lot of the people in class kind of, like, giggle at that and laugh, he realizes he might have embarrassed her. And the very, very next scene is him walking near her and being like, I'm sorry if I embarrassed you. I didn't mean to do that. Like, that doesn't happen in teen movies. Usually, especially, like, these days, well, I can't say these days, but, like, in the 2010s and... the first half of 2020s. Nope, I did that wrong. In the early 2000s and the first half of 2010s, that's like where I watched a lot of those movies. And almost always the plot revolved around the main character growing enough to be able to apologize to the people they love and to understand what they have and what they almost lost. Whereas here, it looks like Max just is... a fairly good brother to Danny from the very beginning. And while he does get very frustrated, it's a very understandable frustration. And like, he deals with it in a very mature way, because he does apologize to Danny after kind of like snapping at her, because he realizes that, you know, she wants to trick or treat. She's a child. And just because he does not like that they moved to this town, doesn't mean he gets to take that away from her. And he understands that almost immediately. It's just, like, super interesting just how well they've written a very kind of relatable situation and how there's a huge lack of it for the next 20 years at least.
Sorry, I was listening, but I also just learned, did you know that the actor who played Billy is actually, he was the... monster in Pan's Labyrinth.
Oh, it's the hand fella?
Yeah.
Is he the Aquaman from Hellboy? Is it the same person?
Yeah, I believe so. And cool. he's the amphibian from The Shape of Water.
I have not watched that.
I have not either. I just know it's about a woman falling in love with a fish dude, and he's the fish dude.
That's cool. All right. So he has his little, like, stereotype.
He plays monsters.
Good for him.
Yeah.
He does, you know, it well.
Like, you find your niche and you, like, get in there and you just milk Hollywood for all it's worth. Good for you, Doug Jones.
Yeah, I really like them as the fishman in Hellboy. Aquaman? I forgot his name. I'm sorry. I watched it, like, 15 years ago.
The fishman. Fishman.
The Croatoa.
Koatoa.
That's what I said.
A little D&D humor for those out there who don't know. Anyway, hocus pocus. Okay, I've got a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
You're a witch.
Okay.
And as we've seen in this movie, your writing implement, your broom, can also be a vacuum, which implies that it can be a lot of different cleaning tools.
I have an answer.
What do you pick?
A Roomba.
Okay.
With a knife tape to it.
I think in Hocus Pocus 2, I think one of them does in fact ride a Roomba. Or it might be a Swiffer. I don't remember.
Oh my god.
It's something like, I forget, it's something more modern.
But Swiffer.
There is in fact, it is a Roomba. Mary ends up on the Roomba, I believe.
Oh, Mary's so cool.
Well, I mean.
She figured out that the vacuum is a cleaning utensil. Well, not utensil. What is it? Implement.
Wow, siren.
Oh my god. Yep, I hear it now. I'm in headphones, yeah. So I didn't hear if there are any other ones. But yeah, like, Mary is the one to figure out that a vacuum is a cleaning implement. And, like, they're actually so smart about figuring out how the modern world works. It was actually, it probably would have been very frightening as a child to see. They adapted so fast.
They figure things out, which is, it's interesting that you mentioned, because I rewatched it yesterday, and I think I did take note of that, the fact that, like, at the beginning, they're, like, scared of a road because they think it's water.
Because the pavement is, like, reflecting the rain.
And I was thinking about that, like, yeah, they would have no context for what asphalt is, would they?
Nope.
And then I was thinking about all the other things that probably just, like, are completely bizarre to them. Even, I mean, I feel like in the 1990s, I guess you wouldn't see all the cell phones everywhere, which I'm sure, if I don't remember if it was a plot point in Hocus Pocus 2, but I'm sure there's something about phones in there. Man, they adapt quickly. I mean, enough so that I believe Winnie sings into a microphone when she sings, "I Put a Spell on You."
I think so, yeah.
She knows to use a microphone.
Well, she saw Max use it. Just before.
That's true. That's true. Good point. Okay, so there is...
There are rules for it, yeah.
There are rules. There's some internal consistency here where they show, like, she learns how it works. She doesn't just know how it works. Okay.
The same thing with the bus. When he pretends to shine the headlight as the sun,
yeah,
they realize that it's not actually... that they've been tricked when they hear the car peel away.
Yeah.
And they have been in a bus. They know what the vehicle sounds like.
Yeah.
There was another thing that they've done that was very interesting that I can't remember now. But yeah, like, there's a very clear set of rules. Everything is logical in this movie, which I love.
I'm just flabbergasted thinking about it, because it's just, it's true. Like, there is no, like, plot holes in this movie.
Because I was thinking,
impressive.
Like...
Because it's goofy as heck. It's so just goofy. A children's movie that aired on Disney. Okay, I didn't say what implement I would use.
Yeah, what would you use?
I mean, I guess since the Roomba is accounted for, a Swiffer would be nice. I mean, they're pretty light, which is nice.
I guess, but that's like a
vegan. But you have to be able to balance on it. You have to be able to balance on it. Like, what
Swiffers
else can you
are
do?
So thin. At least a broom has like a hefty sort of like handle, you know?
Can I totally digress real quick?
No. Why would you ever do that? Go ahead.
Because this has been bugging me all week. Have you ever heard of a cinnamon broom?
No. What is that?
Okay. So I was at Trader Joe's, and they just have this stack of brooms, like wooden, fake, decorative brooms that are cinnamon scented. And apparently you just buy one and put it in your home, and then you have it makes everything smell like cinnamon. And it serves as, like, some fall decor.
And that's cool.
No, but the thing that bugs me is that, like, I've seen them three different places. And then I had the radio on in the background. And someone, like, offhand mentioned one. And I was like, are these a thing? Like, have I gone my entire life without knowing about cinnamon brooms? And they're just, like... a normal fall tradition for people, like Elf on the Shelf or something? Or like, did I just totally miss the cinnamon broom bus? And then I called my mom and I was like, have you ever heard of this? And she's like, oh yeah, we had them growing up. I'm like, what the heck?
What? I've literally never seen or heard of them.
Okay. I'm like, did I cross over, like, did I cross dimensions from the cinnamon broomless dimension into the cinnamon broom dimension?
Do you want to change your answer from Swiffer to cinnamon broom?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. But, like, also no, because I'm very suspicious of them.
Do you want me to do, like, a really cool segue back into Hocus Pocus from that?
Please.
Because I remembered what I wanted to say. And if you do choose cinnamon broom, there will be a little scent of cinnamon that you can follow to find you, right?
Okay.
Well, in this book, the Sanderson sisters.
This book.
Oh. When I read this movie.
When I read this movie.
So in the movie,
Val doesn't watch movies. She just gets the script and reads it.
I just turn on the captions and only look at the captions. I don't actually know what anyone in the movie looks like. There's one of the pretty big plot points is that Max steals their spell book and they're trying to find it and they can't and they're freaking out, right? Like, usually you would think that in most movies, they would just like, we would focus on Max and then have the witches just like show up because he does have the book and they are looking for it, right? Here, what they did is they focused on witches not being able to find Max because it's a whole town. Like, if you lose a person and that person drives away in a car and you have to make your way out of a forest back into the town, like, you're not going to find that person. It's very difficult. But they had the book emit a light.
Yeah.
So there's even rules for them finding Max. Like, they have rules for them finding the kids with Mary being able to, like, sniff them out. Like, it's very interesting how they kind of covered all the bases. It's really fun. I'm really enjoying it. And I think even, like, we haven't really talked about Danny. What are your thoughts on Danny? I want to get your fresh opinion.
I mean, typical little kid vibes in a lot of ways, but, like, a little more sensitive and self-aware than I think most. I think she's supposed to be, like, 8 years old. Definitely has that precocious 8-year-old vibe. I don't know. I don't have too much else to say. It feels like you're setting up for something, though. What do you have to say about Danny?
She is such a good tool to get Max in trouble. And from the very first word that comes out of her mouth, she is there just to make his life harder.
Yeah.
And it goes all the way through the movie. And I really like that she also does not change. Like, she starts the same way she ends. A little, like, bratty sister. Just as Max starts as a very decent young man. Like, he's pretty kind and emotionally aware. It's really interesting. But yeah, just like Danny mouthing off to every single person.
Yeah.
It's so good. I will say that the thing I liked least about it is that she wasn't more help to Allison and Max.
Yeah.
She was very much a liability the whole way through. But I think everything else was so very well written that it didn't bother me that much.
Okay.
Do you have anything that, like, you didn't
And writ large about the movie? I mean, if we're really, I don't know, I just really like this movie. To me, this is like, I watch it every Halloween season, every Spooktober.
Oh, nice.
And for me, it's just, you know, good vibes, fall vibes. But I mean, if I had to criticize something, you know, obviously the visual effects are a little dated. But
I will say
that's me digging for something. So,
but they are a very specific art style for the movie. Like, when you see Billy and when you see the way that the witches are dressed up, like, that is very clearly Hocus Pocus.
I mean, I feel like a lot of the vibes of the costuming and makeup, at least for the supernatural characters, is giving me a lot of Tim Burton vibes.
Kinda, yeah. It's very goosebumpy. Like, lot of...
What?
Because there's, like, a lot of, like, fog machines and, like, over-exaggerated green skin on Billy, for example, stuff like that.
We're talking about the Goosebumps TV series?
Yeah.
Okay. I was just like, wait.
Read movies, Chloe.
Okay. I was just confused because, like, the books, I'm just like, I've read a lot of the Goosebump books, but I don't remember about that. Okay. No, that makes more sense. I mean, like, it definitely has, there is that kind of, I just think of it, I associate it with Tim Burton and, like, Beetlejuice and, like, that kind of aesthetic. And
especially I feel like this one Mary's really hair.
Has that. Yeah, her hair. The witch's outfits with, like, a lot of garish clashing colors.
Billy's, like, little frizzy hairdo.
Yeah.
All that stuff.
It's just very Burton-esque, I guess, to invent an adjective.
You know what we should have done?
What should we have done?
We should have done Paranorman, because that does have a queer character in it.
I haven't seen it.
It's a really fun movie. This actually reminds me a whole lot of Paranorman. And if any of you have not watched it, y'all should. It's really, really pretty. I think Laika Studios did it. Let me just double check
that. Is that the one? It's about, there's like the bro-y guy and he's got like a cheerleader girlfriend.
Well,
and the main character can speak to the dead.
Speak to the dead. Football Casey guy. Affleck
as Mitch Down, the jock.
Mm-hmm. Anna Kendrick.
He later reveals Courtney. That he has a boyfriend.
You just spoiled the movie for everyone, Chloe. I'm kidding.
Oops.
It's more than 10 years old. It's fine.
Okay.
You're thinking, like, the love interest for him is Anna Kendrick, who is playing Courtney, who's Norman's sister. And she wants to date him. And she keeps trying to, like, you know, have him notice her. But they're not together.
Yeah.
It's real silly. It's also really sad.
I have seen it, but I don't remember anything about it.
There's a witch. It's all of these movies have, like, a witch. It's very similar to Fear Street.
So, okay, this reminds me of something that I was thinking about with this movie, which is that, like, one of my favorite scenes is the scene where the Sanderson sisters see the trick-or-treaters and they see the guy dressed as the devil and assume he is the devil. And they go and, like, talk to him like he's the devil. And he's just, like, playing along with the idea that they're the Sanderson sisters because he assumes that they are. And I don't know what was interesting. So, like, I know in, like, witch lore that, you know, like, according to witch hunters that, like, witches were in league with Satan. Mm-hmm. And it was just interesting to me that a kids movie would go there, I guess. Again,
and that's like a throwaway little gag.
Yeah, that, like, these characters and like, again, it's very sexual. Mm-hmm. The conversation, like, doesn't I feel like the guy has a wife who gets kind of annoyed by them because they're implying and then, like, right, like, that
it's very clearly, you know, like, a problem in their marriage already.
Yeah, but, like, I know, like, one of the things is that, like, witches are the bride of Satan or whatever, and they really lean into that, and it's, like, very fascinating that, like, especially coming off the heels of the 1980s satanic panic, that, like, they did that in this kids movie in the early 90s, which I don't know, like, if you are aware of, but that was, like, what like caused D&D to go through a lot of problems in the 80s was the satanic panic. So
that is very interesting. Yeah, I didn't realize that at first until you said that. That's risky.
Yeah.
Do you think maybe that's, like, why it was a flop? Maybe
I don't know. Let's see what Wikipedia says about it. The film has an approval rating of 40% based on 63 reviews. Siskel of Siskel and Ebert remarked that the film was a dreadful witch's comedy, with the only tolerable moment coming when Bette Midler presents a single song. Okay, Siskel, what the heck? Roger Ebert gave it 1 star out of 4, writing that it was a confusing cauldron in which there is great activity but little progress and a lot of hysterical shrieking.
Okay, man, so just don't let these guys...
These old dudes.
Yeah, just don't let them watch any movies. If it was French, I would have bet, like, I bet they would have gave it a bigger grade. Idiots. Ugh.
Yeah, who do Siskel and Ebert think they are? Aside from being the most two famous film reviewers of all time.
Well, have they considered the audience? Like, it might be a one if you have critiqued every movie in the world. But it's a really good movie, especially for kids, for Halloween.
Yeah.
Like, really, really, really good.
I feel like it's not just good. It's just, like, iconic.
It's iconic. Like, it very much is contained within the story, which I also like. I think a lot of, like, Disney movies do it just because they have to be contained with the set dressing and all that stuff. But, like, even the idea of a bigger world of magic out there is not part of this movie. Like, never once have I thought of any other magic user in the world. They did that really well as well. Like, I was focused on the plot the whole time.
Yeah.
And in a lot of other sort of, like, movies and shows that are very similar that are made for teenagers and kids, I think most of them hint at a bigger world of supernatural, just because probably, you know, it opens up the opportunity for sequels, for different like spin-offs, things like that, which a lot of movies tend to do, especially with Disney and stuff like that. But like here they just didn't bother with it, which I like.
Yeah.
It's a tight 90. It's a tight it 90. Other than this movie, what are like some of your other Halloween time movies that you watch?
That's a good question. So I feel like this one is definitely a standout, but a lot of the other movies I think of are ones that I watched growing up. So one that comes immediately to mind is The Ghost and Mr. Chicken, which is an ancient film, which came out in 1966. It's a comedy horror starring Don Knotts, and it's just about, it's really bad. Like, it is not a good movie. It's just like this scaredy cat has to go to this haunted mansion, and he's there, I guess, and there's a ghost.
Okay.
It's not bad. I don't know. It's just goofy. I mean, I love Beetlejuice.
Mm-hmm.
I love Nightmare. Is Nightmare Before Christmas?
Is it a Christmas Halloween or a Halloween movie?
Yes, that's always the question I have. Because they, you watch it and then they have like, you know, like you're like, okay, this is good Halloween vibes. And then the middle third is just so focused on Christmas. And you're like, okay, no,
it's a
Thanksgiving movie. And the Easter Bunny is in it for a moment. So, hey.
Yeah, you have your pick. It's
all seasons. I'm also, I mean, like, on the more serious side, I think one of my favorite horror films is The Shining. I just think about that scene. Have you seen The Shining?
I don't think so.
That's a no. I think that's a no. You will know.
I remember, like, the boy doing the steps. So I think I've seen it, but I might have been so young.
Okay.
That's from there, right? The little boy, like, running and then walking
there
backwards.
There is a little boy
in the snow to, like, hide the tracks.
Yeah, I think that does happen.
Okay, so I probably have seen it. I was also probably
I think that's at the end. there's just a very... Okay, this is... This scene of, like... I just think about this scene a lot of, like... There's this part where the main character, Jack Nicholson's character, is going really mad and he's chasing his wife through the house. And we cut to his, like, while he's running by, there's a door that opens and we see a person in a bear costume going down on a man in a tuxedo.
What?
This scene is never explained. It's never talked about again. There's no context for it. It's just there for about 3 seconds and then it's over. And it's just that scene. I just think about it so much because it's like, why is it there? It's like one of the most genuinely creepy scenes of all time.
Interesting. I have Googled it. And the first thing that comes up is The Shining's Bear Man is the film's biggest mystery.
And I mean, I'm sure there's like some guy on Reddit who has like a 30 paragraph thing with all these citations explained. I don't want to know what the solution to this mystery is. Some mysteries, there's not an answer to them. Sometimes you don't need to know. The question doesn't have to have an answer. It just can be something that haunts you. And that scene haunts me. And I'm okay with that.
That is anyway. Haunting, yeah.
What are your Halloween horror movies?
I mean, I grew up with Halloween Town, especially in like the United States, because we don't really celebrate Halloween in Russia. Maybe we do now, I don't know. But it wasn't a thing when I was a kid. I used to really like Practical Magic.
Okay, yeah, I know that one.
I watched it all the time as a kid. Sandra Bullock isn't it?
Right. It's about, I don't remember what it's about.
It's these two witch sisters. There's a lot of domestic violence.
Oh, God.
It's like her sister is in a relationship with a really, really bad man who, like, is a bad man, and they are trying to get rid of him.
Oh, my God. Ghostbusters. How can I forget Ghostbusters?
Yeah, Ghostbusters. That's another that I also forgot about, but definitely was very much a Halloween thing.
Adam's Family.
Adam's Family I can watch anytime.
That's true. See our episode on Wednesday. Little self-promo.
Not the day of the week, the TV show.
I mean, also, we should do an episode on the day of the week. Wednesday is definitely the gayest day of the week.
It is. It's like not in the
It's the hump day.
It's the hump day. It's not in the beginning. It's not at the end. It doesn't know what it is.
Yeah.
Very queer.
It's a switch.
So it's non-binary. There's another one. Hold on. Oh, Scary Movie.
Scary Movie. Oh.
I guess we can do screen.
I don't like that. I don't like Scary Movie. I saw it in theaters growing up, and I thought it was so stupid.
I love how stupid it is.
It's somehow they made a movie that's too stupid to even be like a stupid fun watch. Like, it is just so stupid.
Oh, I had a lot of fun watching Cindy be dumb. We can agree to disagree.
I don't remember any. Yeah, I just don't remember. It's just, yeah, whatever. I mean, I don't fault you for liking it, but anyway, what else?
What else? You already said Beetlejuice, which I really love.
Yeah.
Casper.
Okay.
Casper
the
was a
live
fun
action one.
Yeah. With with
Christina Ricci. I think I saw that in theaters.
I had a VHS.
It's so weird. The movies, I saw so many weird Halloween movies in theaters, and I have no idea why.
Every Halloween, you would just go to the movies. 4 days a week for four
like,
weeks.
I'm looking at this list of movies and I'm like, how many of these days? Like, because I definitely saw Sleepy Hollow in theaters. I have no idea why, because that movie sucked. The Johnny Depp one about the Headless Horseman, and he plays the, like, detective, I guess. I don't know.
Freddy Krueger was fun. I think that's one of the only horrors that I was able to watch.
Nightmare on Elm Street,
Yeah.
Have you seen Rocky Horror Picture Show? Because we should do an episode about that at some point.
I think you ask that to me every 20 or so episodes.
Because it is like it was the first big queer cult classic film, I feel like. And it like created the whole genre of like the cult classic queer film up there with like Hedwig and the Angry Inch and... to Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything.
Corpse Bride.
And
sorry, I just remembered what I wanted to say.
I'm just giving you time while I list off these queer, I don't know, drag queen movies. Anyway,
we have Coraline. That's fun. Very creepy.
Have you seen Blair Witch Project?
No, I will be scared forever.
Right. So here's the interesting thing. Okay, I feel like Blair Witch Project, like, it came out and it was, like, it invented, you know, the whole, like, single camera, found footage, shaky cam horror genre.
Which gives me a headache.
So then don't watch it, because it is a whole lot of just cameras bouncing in a dark forest, but...
I think I started watching it. I think my cousins were watching it and I was in the room. We got home early from a bar mitzvah. The thing where they snip the snap. We got home early and we watched I Am Legend. And then they started watching that movie. And I freaked out. But I watched the whole thing, I think. So I might have seen it.
Okay.
Is it the one where the college students with their cameras are like...
in the woods and they get lost and they slowly... they bicker a whole bunch and then supernatural things keep happening around them. And
yeah. Ugh.
Yeah. Like, this is what I'm trying to say. Like, actually, I think that movie got like, I feel like it got parodied to death in the early 2000s, but I think it's actually a pretty good scary movie.
It is horrifying. Like, it was so scary. I blocked it out entirely. I remember a lot of the scary movies I watched.
What is the scariest movie you've ever seen?
Okay, so this is going to be a really funny answer.
Okay.
But I'm going to answer honestly. And you are allowed to bully me for it.
Okay.
The scariest movie that I've ever seen personally was Scary Movie 3. And here is why. When the little ghost girl climbs out of the TV, my sister, who was at the time about 4 years of age, came out of the shower. The apartment is pitch black, just the light from the TV, right? It's a scene where there's the girl on the screen and my sister in her little white gown with her long, wet black hair came into the living room. And I got silent. I freaked out. I was quiet. Like, everything seized because I'm like, it's real. And that is the scariest movie for me because of that specifically. Because my sister, who was 4 at the time, walked into the room with a white, white gown and wet hair. How about you?
I might have to say The Witch was really scary to me. Like, that gave me nightmares.
You know what gave me nightmares?
What?
Dawn of the Dead.
Really?
The sprinting zombies.
Okay.
Just, like, freaked me out a little bit.
Have you seen the Night of the Living Dead, the original black and white one?
Yeah.
I always find that movie so fascinating because it's not really a scary movie. It's really just a metaphor for
racism.
Racial.
Yep.
Yeah, racism. I just remember seeing it in college and being like, holy crap. Anyway.
This has devolved into zombie movies.
Just listing movies that we like. I mean, I love zombie movies.
I love
28
zombies.
Days Later.
Yeah.
I feel like the first half hour of 28 Days Later is, like, some of the best, like, atmospheric horror of all time. Just, like, all those scenes of him wandering abandoned London.
In, like, that little hospital gown at first.
With Godspeed You Black Emperor playing in the background. Oh,
and, like,
so good.
Didn't he have just, like, a plastic bag?
Yeah, he's holding, like, a plastic bag. And he's the shaggy looking dude.
Iconic.
Like shaggy from... Yeah, it's just iconic.
We should do an episode where we just talk zombies. I would love to do that. I can watch zombie movies.
We can talk about The Girl with All the Gifts again. Sorry, those were not zombies. They were hungry.
They were hungry. So I was like, munchies? No, that's different.
They were munchies. Like, they just had a little something, and now they just want some snacks.
We can do Walkers from The Walking Dead. We can do Vampires from I'm Legend.
I've only watched the first season of The Walking Dead, though.
I don't remember it very well. But I do remember that there are quite a few characters that I really liked, and every time they would get killed.
I thought that was, like, the whole point.
I know, that's the whole point.
It's, like, the Game of Thrones idea of, like, no one is safe. Anyway, thank you so much for tuning in. I just want to mention our social media. We have a Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. It is @InMediaLez. Our subreddit is r/InMediaLez. Our Tumblr is...
thepodinmedialez.tumblr.com.
You can email us at inmedialez@gmail.com. Our website is inmedialez.com. And a link to our Discord server is in the... description. That's the word I'm looking for. That is a word that exists. Thank
go watch
you
the description.
So much. Go watch the description. and read the movie and watch the description. Thank you all so much for tuning in.
And then we'll see you in the next one.
And Babadook bless you.
Hey everybody, thank you for listening, and please don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss new episodes. Also, it helps us grow, and we appreciate every single one of you who follows. And if you like us, tell a friend. Just be like, hey, these two lesbians are talking about other lesbians, gays, non-binary folk, and really queer people. Once again, thanks for listening, and we really appreciate you.